Welcome to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. Separate and unequal is how the chairman of the State Senate Education Committee describes how South Florida school districts are doling out teacher raises paid for by voter-approved property tax hikes.
I think that those referendum that say that they're going to be used to pay for public school teachers should go to all public school teachers, not only union school teachers.
That's Hialeah Republican Senator Manny Diaz Jr. Now, late last week, the House Speaker in the Florida House, Jose Oliva, sent a letter to the Miami-Dade County School District. He called out the property tax increase voters approved of last fall that would go toward teacher pay and school safety, writing that, quote, an illusion was created that the additional taxes would be used to benefit all schools, end quote. Now, the district has previously committed to sharing with charter schools funding for school security, but not for teacher pay. This is what Miami-Dade School Superintendent Alberto Carvalho told us before the November vote on the tax referendum.
I don't negotiate with teachers in charter schools. They have independent boards. They are not part of the Florida retirement system. And I can provide no assurances that any committed funds would be utilized in the way that we promise they will be utilized in Miami-Dade County Public Schools.
It is a similar rationale that was heard from Palm Beach County, where its teacher pay referendum specified the pay hikes were for, quote, district school teachers. Superintendent Donald Fenoy explained it this way to us before that vote.
It was in our best interest to not include charters because we couldn't guarantee to the taxpayers that we could hold those charter schools accountable for the additional dollars that they could receive.
So accountability and teacher pay. This week in Palm Beach County, a third charter school sued the district over the teacher pay hikes. Here we are now, the issue of charter schools and money on the South Florida Roundup this week as the state legislature gets down to work. What could be at stake between the local referendum on increasing property taxes to pay for teacher pay and the types of teachers that are in line to get those pay hikes? Should the teacher pay hikes okayed by voters be shared with public charter school teachers? If you voted on one of these referenda, and they were in all four counties here in South Florida in some way, shape, or form over the past couple of election cycles, what was your assumption about who would get a pay raise if you approved of the pay tax hike? 800-743-WLRN, the telephone wide open, 800-743-9576. If you'd like to send us a text, you can. The text number is 786-786-7636. Again, text at 786-786-7636. Jessica Bakeman covers education for us here at WLRN. Colleen Wright watches the school district and education for our partner, the Miami Herald. Andrew Mara is along with us as well. He watches education for the Palm Beach Post. Jessica, let's walk up to all the varying referenda before we talk about the results. What led, though, what was the environment that led to this push to put to voters whether or not to raise taxes for teacher pay?
So in recent years, the legislature, the House especially, has been really serious about not allowing school districts or localities to generate more property taxes as property values have risen. Mm-hmm. So that has really squeezed public schools. The state has said, okay, we'll try to make that up with some state funding, but they haven't risen to that level. So last year, a lot of the state funding that the legislature put towards schools was in a response to the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. It was mainly about security and mental health funding. And the money that came in for actually educating students, you've heard lots, 47 cents, right? It mm-hmm. came in at 47 cents increase per student. And that's on average. In some school districts, it was better and worse. So school districts basically said, we know we need to start paying our teachers more. Florida has one of the lowest average teacher salaries in the country. And we're facing an impending urgent teacher shortage. So we're going to have to go to our voters and say, can we tax you more so that we can pay teachers more?
And Colleen, voters overwhelmingly approved these measures. In Monroe County, it was directed more for school safety measures, but in Dade County, Broward County, and Palm Beach County, it was a mix of teacher pay and school security efforts, and voters said, okay, I'll pay more taxes.
Yeah, the idea of having referendums is not a new idea. I believe it was started in Sarasota, maybe in the early 2000s. I believe there's been like about 20 or so school districts that have had referenda, and and this is over 2 decades almost now, and not once have they ever failed. They have a term limit. I believe most of the referenda are 4 years, like Miami-Dade's, like mm-hmm. Broward's, like Sarasota's, which started it.
And that's a state law that mandates that in terms of how long the property tax increase can be approved for. It can only be approved for up to 4 years.
Yes. Yes. And even with every reelection, it has never failed in any district in Florida ever. Although there are efforts in Tallahassee to expand that to 10 years. Mm. So it has a longer shelf life. You don't have to go to the voters so often.
800-743-9576. Talking charter schools and teacher pay. 800-743-WLRN on the telephone. The text line also open. 786-786-7636. To text, just 786-786 and then 7636. Andrew Mara watches education in Palm Beach County for the Palm Beach Post. Andrew, the referenda that was on the ballot for Palm Beach voters was slightly different. It kind of anticipated this debate in a certain way, didn't it?
That's right. It specifically excluded charters in the language. So when voters walked in, they knew if they read it, they knew that charters would not be part of it. And there had been a bit of a tug of war about that the previous summer, and the school board was writing the language that would go on the ballot. Originally, the superintendent wanted to include charters. The school board was opposed to that, and so there was a turnabout, and they decided not to include the charters.
So the language in the Palm Beach ballot was something about district schools. It didn't specify. It didn't explicitly say it's not for charter school teachers. It said something about district schools. I mean, is that enough of a gray area? I mean, clearly enough of a gray area that charter school operators are suing Palm Beach County right now, Andrew?
I think the term was district-operated schools, and it was certainly understood to mean that the schools operated by the school district, which would mean not charter schools. So it was well understood that charters would not be were not intended to receive any money from it. The charters are suing not based on the language. They're arguing that it's just illegal to exclude charters from the money, regardless of what the intent of the referendum was.
Getting some texts here. And, for instance, one from 561 area code up in Palm Beach County. I thought teachers and school hardening for the referenda. Another 561. It was the last vote previously 2 years before. That was for general improvements and maintenance workers. A text from 954, I had the impression that all schools, including public charters, would receive the increase. If it was clear otherwise, I would not have voted for it. Jessica, what do you make about this kind of gray area that, to some degree, some parties were anticipating prior to that November election, and here we are?
Well, I think there's a great misunderstanding about charter schools and what they are, right? Even in that text, someone said public charter schools, mm-hmm. right? There is no such thing as a charter school that's not public. Technically, right, they are funded with public dollars. However, they are operated by private companies. And sometimes those nonprofits that operate the charter schools turn over all the money to a for-profit company. So it is complicated, but I think that especially in the cases of Miami-Dade where you have, you know, there was no language that tried to say this is only for district schools, I can see where people would read it and think this is going to go to all the schools. And if you're a parent of a child who goes to a charter school, I don't see why you would assume that charter schools would not benefit from
that. The school administration says it doesn't have control over those teachers. It doesn't have control over ensuring that those charter schools use the resources, the financial resources that are given to them for specific reasons, including this referendum money that's going to be collected for teacher pay.
Right. School boards have some oversight ability over the charter schools that are in their district.
Sure.
But not nearly as much, of course, as the control they have over their own public schools. And in Miami-Dade, they already negotiated with the teachers union exactly how much money the raises were going to be for teachers. So if this has to be reversed, they're going to have to go back on that, and there are going to be some really unhappy teachers.
Yeah, crack open that contract talk again. In Miami, Glenn on line two, you're first up on the phones. Go ahead, Glenn, you're on the radio.
I agree with the last statement. The public should not fund privately owned institutions like charter schools. We don't pay taxes to make people rich. Education is supposed to be a public good. So I'm totally against any increased funding going to privately owned charter schools. They don't perform as well. Their test scores are about the same as public schools, and they're just draining money from the public to make people rich.
Glenn in Miami, thank you for that. This idea of, as Glenn calls them, privately owned charter schools, they're public charter schools. Colleen, let me ask you to respond to one text that we had here from, area code 207. Don't the charter schools brag about having better teachers because of better pay? Why do they want more? What is the pay situation inside a public charter school? What do we know about that?
That is a really good question. So Jessica just touched on this. Each charter school has its own little governing board, and they are the ones who kind of set the salaries and, you know, contracts with their own teachers. I was actually really curious about that, and I pulled some of those numbers from the Florida Department of Education. It's actually true. Charter school teachers actually make less than traditional public school teachers. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, mm-hmm. but they were low. I want to say in Miami-Dade, it was around like 43,000 or so for charter school teachers. Compare that to, and I believe, mixing it up, it's either an average or a median salary. But for Miami-Dade, for public school teachers, that looks more like 47 for the average, yeah. I would say. So
10% difference.
I would say so. Now, I know that some of the charter schools are really unhappy. I've seen a few kind of internal emails that they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to do something to make their teachers happy, because there's been talk about, you know, what if teachers jump ship and go to the public school system. But I think it's important to note, too, that the charter school movement was largely born out of anti-union resentment, basically, anti-union sentiment. That was a driving force in the charter school movement, that, you know, we don't want to have to deal with the union. We don't have to deal, you know, we should just have teachers be privately hired and paid.
Yeah, well, the idea was more flexibility, more local control, more local accountability at the school-based level, not at a centralized administration level. Jessica.
Yeah, well, one thing I wanted to mention is that as we've seen the history in Florida, the development of the charter school industry over time, you'll hear legislators say all the time who've been here for a long time, you know, at the beginning, charter schools said, we'll never ask for anything. We'll never ask for money for construction or to pay the rent on our buildings. And yet now they do get that, mm-hmm. you know. So I think over time, the charter school industry, as it gets bigger and stronger, is demanding more and more of the same resources that public schools are getting. And as you mentioned, the trade-off is they actually don't have a lot of those regulations and the bureaucratic situation that the public schools have to deal with. So then the public schools are saying, fine, you want the same amount of money that we have? You should have the same accountability that we have.
Yeah. Talking about charter schools, teacher pay, lawsuits in Palm Beach County, for instance, over what Palm Beach County voters approved of last fall, which was a property tax increase for 4 years to help pay for higher teacher pay. Miami-Dade, Broward County voters did the same thing, challenges to whether or not public charter school teachers should be able to partake in those higher pay scales. Your phone calls at 800-743-9576, 800-743-9576. Text at 786-786-7636, 786-786-7636. 36. A text here from 201 area code. Charter schools should not double dip. They are already taking funds away from public schools. Andrew Mara from the Palm Beach Post with us from Palm Beach County. Give us the environment that charter schools are operating in and the general accountability that's in play in Palm Beach County and this friction that the teacher pay referendum has created.
Yeah, well, over the last couple of years, it's been this building tension between the charters and the school board. I mean, there always is sort of this natural tension between them, but there's been a lot of litigation. The school board has refused to open to approve the opening of a couple of charter schools, and some of the schools have sued over that, and then it's been on appeal, and it's been back and forth in the courts for a couple of years. And now, of course, there's this issue. It's been a growing tension, and obviously it's an existential issue here for the schools because the charters are growing. It's leveled off in the last couple of years, but if you take students from the district schools, and district schools are concerned about that, and they do control the purse string to some extent, and this is one way they're able to raise the money, control how much goes to the charters.
Another text from 954, do people realize that charter school teachers don't get a pension? This saves taxpayers a lot of money already give them a raise, says the texter. Alberto Carvalho, the superintendent of Miami-Dade County, Jessica, when we spoke with him in November before, or in October before the November, made that point. In fact, in the soundbite that we played, that he and the school district don't have the accountability control over teacher pay, and the charter school teachers don't have access to the Florida teacher pension system.
Right. And I think that one thing that we should be looking for with the upcoming legislative session is, how is the legislature going to handle this? Because clearly Speaker Oliva sent that letter to the Miami-Dade County School District, made it clear, you know, we're interested in this, we're watching you, you know, but I think that that letter is definitely not going to be the last thing that we see. And if especially if the legislature is not happy with how this ultimately gets resolved in South Florida, then they're going to probably be looking maybe this session, but maybe more likely in future sessions when they'll have more time. What kind of legislation can we do to say that if there is a local referendum, it absolutely has to benefit all schools, including charter schools?
Could the legislature step in here and require these school districts to share the teacher pay with public charter school teachers, even after they've agreed to a contract with the traditional school teachers?
I'm not sure they could, because if they passed a law, it wouldn't be retroactive.
Yeah.
So I think they could control that in the future. But I think they could also say, hey, we have control over the budget. Do you want to get more money this year? If you don't, then don't give this money to charter schools.
Let's go to line four. Lewis in Miami, you've been patient. Go ahead, Lewis. You're on the radio.
Oh, hi. Yes. So I have several friends who work for charter schools and also family members who work for the public schools. And it's kind of disingenuous for the charter schools teachers to be like, we deserve more pay, because they get privately funded as well. It's like a hybrid system. These corporations that run the charter schools also are able to privately raise their own funds, and whereas the public schools are limited into the amount that they can receive from Tallahassee. So it's like they're double dipping and then also saying it's unfair. So it's
gotcha. Lewis, thanks for that. Jessica, your response?
Just to add to that, I would point out that public school districts and individual schools often have foundations that raise additional funding for them as well. I don't know that that funding necessarily goes towards salary, but it certainly could be used to help teachers in other ways, like maybe to give them money for supplies for their classrooms.
Colleen Wright with the Miami Herald, how would you describe the relationship with the public charter schools and more traditional public schools in Miami-Dade County and the Miami-Dade County School Administration?
You know, Alberto Carvalho often harps on the fact that, you know, this is a district of choice, you know, instead of being, you know, some districts are resistant to charter schools or crack down on them really hard. He tries to, you know, have this relationship of, you know, let's have choice. Let's have competition. That's okay. There's even district managed charter schools. However, interesting, I actually had a reader ask me about this the other day. Do teachers in the district manage charter schools get this money? And the answer is they don't, because they are not represented by the union. I know that charter schools, you know, the Florida Alliance for Charter Schools, they've kind of banded together, you know, they kind of circulated a flyer before saying, you know, hey, before the election, saying, hey, voters, you know, parents, taxpayers, you're aware that charter schools are, it's not clear that they're included in this. And then when I talked to the charter school movement, they said, well, we didn't get in the way of passing this referendum, but they are fighting for it now. They are getting some money on the safety side, you know, for officers to be staffed in schools. That's a new requirement from last year, but not on teachers.
Yeah, in fact, in Dade County and in Palm Beach County, we know, Jessica, prior to the vote in November, the superintendents were clear that they would share the school security money with all schools, all public schools, regardless of charter or traditional in their districts. The teacher pay issue, obviously much different.
Yeah, and I think that what Superintendent Carvalho said to us specifically is, I see children as all children of the same God. And he was making that argument in terms of saying it's critical for us to make sure that we provide for the safety. I think you also want to think about the fact that nobody wants a school shooting to happen. Nobody wants students to be injured or for there to be some kind of disaster. And even if that happened at a charter school, it's still going to be the problem of the school district that's overseeing it. So, of course, it's in their interest to make sure that those schools are safe and secure.
A text from 305. My wife is a teacher in Broward County. She used to work at a charter school, now public, and was paid less at the charter school and received worse benefits. A text from 954, these charter schools are essentially private, for-profit schools masking as public schools. If someone wants to open a charter school, he or she should pony up the money to fund it. Andrew Morrow, what's been the school district response to these lawsuits been filed by the charter school operators on behalf of their teachers to try to get some of the referendum money?
Well, they're obviously going to defend themselves in court, and they do say that they think they're on solid legal grounds. It really is an unresolved legal question. It seems like, as far as I can tell, this has not really been decided by the courts, except for one case in Indian River County where a judge actually found in favor of the charter schools in Indian River. There's a very similar case, and he did rule in their favor, and the Indian River County School Board was required to pay millions of dollars to the schools for a share of the referendum. But that's just one case that was never appealed. So it's really unresolved legally, but the school district obviously will fight it out in court, and it'll probably be in the courts for a couple of years.
Andrew Morrow watches education for the Palm Beach Post. Colleen Wright is with us from our partner, the Miami Herald, from our studios in Doral. Jessica Bakeman watching education for us here at WLRN. All three of you, thanks for joining us on the South Florida Roundup.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still to come, tolls and taxes. Who should say what they can be spent on to try to untangle traffic in South Florida? That's next. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Traffic and tolls, just two of the biggest complaints folks across South Florida have about getting around. Well, there's a bill in the State House that would get rid of the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority. That's the board that administers highway tolls on a number of roads in Miami-Dade County. The state's transportation department would take over. The bill also would rewrite the rules for sales taxes collected for transit projects. Specifically, the 0.5% sales tax that Dade County voters approved in 2002. State Senator Manny Diaz is one of the bill's sponsors. He says it's forcing a conversation that's been a long time coming in the Miami-Dade County Commission and community.
Sometimes they need a little push. Sometimes there needs to be a sense of urgency. This bill creates a sense of urgency.
We spoke with Senator Diaz about transportation and taxes, along with the Miami Herald's Doug Hanks. Senator Diaz, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Your bill, it would change how local tax revenue that's earmarked for transportation can be spent. How would it change that if you're successful?
So are you talking about the half penny tax in Miami-Dade?
I'm talking about any surtax that's collected for transportation purposes.
Correct.
So because your legislation doesn't specify it's only the half penny tax in Dade County, correct?
Right. That is, it doesn't specify it, but that's our aim. And so What the intent of our bill, and it's not in a perfect form yet. It's a work in progress as it goes through committee, is to make sure that the residents of Miami-Dade can count that the revenue from the surtax is used for new, innovative public transportation and other ways of them getting around, and not to be sucked into the county current operations, which is not what they were sold when they voted on this item, over 15 years ago.
Doug, how would that change the tenor of using that that tax by the county commission?
Well, what the county says is if the bill becomes law, they really can't expand transit because they need that that sales tax to fund operations and maintenance. And they also need it to sort of show that it's available to compete for these federal funds. And that was, for all the controversy, that actually was an undisputed provision of the original 2002 referendum that this money will be used to pay for maintenance and operations of new projects. But, of course, what's happened is there really haven't been that many new major projects, and they've been using the money just to subsidize the transit budget, which, by the way, just takes the pressure off property taxes, which subsidize transit budget.
So, Senator Diaz, I mean, if you're successful in this and putting these guardrails on the half penny tax in Dade County, does that subsequently result in, you know, higher property taxes as the county looks for ways to supplement that money in the current daily operations?
I think that's a very valid point, and I think that's why it's a fluid situation with this piece of legislation. Look, the reason for the legislation is because we have received from our constituents a response that they can't take it anymore. In other words, traffic in Miami-Dade has not gotten better but gotten worse. Tolls have appeared everywhere. And so the promises that were made in the past of being able to have a more nimble, more efficient transit system in Miami-Dade just haven't occurred. And so while these solutions are not in perfect form, I think the idea to start with was to start a conversation and try to figure out how do we do this. By no means do we have any aim to force the county to have higher property taxes, because neither Representative Avila or myself are in favor of higher taxes. But I just think we need to figure this out. And I think for a long time there's been conversation, but there's been no real action. And I think the danger we run is that within the next 10 years, if Florida, especially if Miami-Dade, continues to grow at the pace that it's growing, we're going to be in a situation where we're just not going to be able to get out of it or resolve it in any way. So I think we're at that crossroads now, and we need to figure this out. And so starting these conversations and having folks forcing them to look at the way things are done now and what we have done over the last 15 years and how do we change it is one of the aims of the legislation.
Representative Avila, that you mentioned from Hialeah, Republican counterpart of yours, Brian Avila, in the House, in the Florida House, that's introduced a very similar piece of legislation in that body. Doug, how does this change, though, the funding formula for county transit at a time of inflection of the SMART plan, the routes of bus, rapid bus expansion down south, the possibility of rail expansion up the central part of Dade County?
Right. Well, I mean, it would be a fundamental change. And if you listen to the county, they say clearly if this passes, we will have to just pump more property taxes into transit. Just there's no other source of money to do the operations and maintenance. I mean, it's either this sales tax or property taxes, because the fares aren't enough. So, but that's the math on that. And so what the bill would do is they really shouldn't be spending this sales tax on regular operations, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then this would eliminate the ability to spend it on the new projects, which is what everyone's clamoring for.
Senator Diaz, you talk about and admit that this targets the half penny in Dade County, but in 2018, voters in Broward County approved a penny tax. In the last couple of years, we've seen voters in Palm Beach County approve a sales tax increase with a portion of the money going to transit. How does this legislation potentially impact those locations?
Well, I've actually been having conversations with members of the legislature from those locations to see how it impacts them and what interest they have in making adjustments to the bill that affects their surtax. There are ways that we can keep this to Dade County, but we're allowing, again, the conversation to take place as early on in the process to see what their sentiments are on their surtax. And there may be, you know, maybe places where it's working better. I understand what Doug is saying. I do agree with it. It's a conundrum we're in, right? They're using this for current operations. I am not totally opposed for them to use this money on new transit projects, maintenance, and operations, because we were providing a new outlet for the reduction of traffic, less cars in the street, and services to our residents. The problem is that where do we go if we continue to allow this to just be sucked into the regular operations of the county? So again, as you mentioned, we're in a conundrum.
Let me ask you, Senator Diaz, about kind of the types of things you would approve of spending as you're kind of negotiating this, politics being the art of the possible with all this. And Doug, to respond,
right,
kind of how it could affect how the county is thinking about transit planning. You know, your legislation as written would put guardrails on this surtax for the purchase of buses, bus rapid transit systems, fixed guideway rapid transit systems, for instance, rail, in other words, or some kind of rail. But what about like traffic synchronization, getting the lights synced up? Could the money be spent on those types of improvements? Improvements, Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, that the county has really touted as beginning to show some success.
Correct.
I'm a big fan of that. So I think if that's one of the solutions that is brought forward, the problem that we have is, I think at this point, we have not been, I personally have not been shown, and I know that Representative Avila has expressed to me, he has not been shown a tangible plan in front of us that says, excuse me, to us, this is what we need to do. This is how we fix it. So yeah, listen, we're spending this much money on current operations. This is what we need to do in order to make these improvements. Can you guys help us craft this? You've forced us to have this conversation. Now, can you help us craft this so it does make sense of what we're trying to do? I'm a big fan of synchronization. I think if we do that in our major thoroughfares, it's going to alleviate traffic. It's going to get people home faster. It's going to reduce frustrations that exist now. Anybody that drives a Miami-Dade is frustrated. There's not one person you talk to that is not frustrated. So I'm open to all that. What I'm saying is, the conversation is not, can't be no. The conversation needs to be, well, these are the solutions that we have on the board. Help us so that we can craft this in a manner where it's, you know, satisfactory to you, satisfactory to the residents, more importantly, and that there's a real plan where I can go back to my constituents and say, listen, this is what the county's doing. There's some things that haven't been done right, but this is what they're moving towards.
So what do you support for the East-West corridor?
I support all the options.
But which one would you? I mean, there's a study underway. Which mode do you favor? How much do you think should be spent there, and what do you think is the right thing to do?
I don't have the details on the actual spending on the East-West corridors in front of me, but what I would say is I think we need to look at each option. If that rail option that's East-West makes sense and it's going to actually get cars, the question is what gets cars off the road? Because if we're not getting cars off the road, then we're not improving. We keep expanding lanes, and all that does is put more cars on the road.
And I guess so. One of the complaints you get from the county is, why is the state legislature diving in and meddling with the county's transportation budget when you have elected officials? They say, hey, like, this is a local issue. Why are we having our local lawmakers legislate from Tallahassee?
Here's the bottom line. The county, the municipalities, they're all appendages of the state. And at the end of the day, I didn't run for state office to get involved in these local issues. But it's become such a big issue, and our constituents are asking for us, and nobody is responding in a way.
But, Senator, how do you explain – yeah, you're at least from Dade County, but how do you explain the state senator from Duval County having a voice in how the surtax that's collected in Dade County is spent in Dade County?
Well, because we're a state at the end of the day, and this is the state legislature. If the problem rises to that – level, then it's going to be decided by the state legislature. Now, we do have a rather large delegation here that has a lot of input. So our delegation is going to have, we have 24 members total, is going to have an impact on how this happens. Yeah. That is not our intent, though. What our intent is for this to cause the local government to make decisions and come up with a solution that we can then just say, okay, We're out of this. Now, when it comes to MDX, that's a different story. That's a creature of the state.
So this is Miami-Dade Expressway Authority, the collector of tolls on the Dolphin and the Palmetto, and I think three other, the Shula and Parkway.
Not the Palmetto. Tolls to the Palmetto are coming. Are you against that, Senator? Tolls on the Palmetto?
So I'm not a fan of tolls, but I do see a difference between express lanes and regular tolls. Now, if you look at my bill, my bill actually has a cap of $5 on those express lanes. I'm still not sure if that's something that we're able to sustain. So I'm a fan of the express lanes on 75. I think they work great. The difference there is there was a lot of space when they did them. I'm not sure what's going to happen on the Palmetto with this, so I'm not a big fan of it. But I do differentiate when folks are having an option of whether to enter a toll lane or continue on a free lane. So I do have – there's a distinction between those two that has to be made.
What about the extension of the Dolphin south into the Kendall area?
And so my conversations that I've had with the mayor as the chair of MDX, and one of his concerns I don't represent those people in Kendall's, and I know that they have a big issue with connectivity. So I'm not against that project. And one of the things that we have said is we are willing to find a solution somehow to make sure that that project is kept and that those folks are able to get connected into the system. The problem is we have to figure out how they don't get completely robbed in their pocketbooks while still being able to pay for the cost of the construction. Obviously, we understand the road construction costs money.
So we're backing into MDX a little bit, but a piece of your bill also would eventually do away with the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority after the bonds that have been issued based upon toll collections are paid off currently. Doug, how would that affect the financial planning for this so-called Kendall Parkway? Well,
that's what I was going to ask now, because currently you have an appointed board controlled by appointees of the county commission. In fact, you have the mayor and the chair of the county commission on the board in charge of this tolling system. And then the bill, I think, would get rid of the MDX right away. It's the tolls that would go away, like in 20 years when the current debt is paid off. But my question is, who's going to pay for the improvements 10 years from now when there's a new exit ramp that's needed or a new overpass? Is that the state's transportation revenue that would then take over and start funding it?
So there's several ways to look at that. One thing is to look at what's on the 5-year plan. Number two, is there a way the DOT, the Florida DOT's bond rating is much better than the MDX's bond rating. So you would be able to refinance those bonds that you speak of and probably use the interest reduction to pay down the debt or reduce tolls.
But,
and so there may be some tolls that are not eliminated. But there would the fares would be reduced.
So the state would continue the tolling beyond the existing debt. So
they would pay for new
projects.
No. The tolls in the bill, they would not be able to do that. This I'm talking about paying down the current debt, so you can get to the point where there's no tolls, and then finding the keeping 100% of the revenues from all of the tolls in South Florida. Currently they're at 90% from the state tolls,
but
that money for the maintenance of those roads.
But those expressways will need maintenance and improvement projects beyond the 5-year plan. So whatever they borrow the money for today, it's not going to be enough to pay for what's happening, what you need 10 years from now.
Well, I mean, at some point, you run out of money.
And isn't it the same argument with the surtax, right? I mean, you're bonding to build the thing, but how are you going to maintain it?
Well, here's the question that I have and that MDX hasn't answered, and that's one of the reasons why we're still at this point is, so how much money do you have? How much do you have in reserve? How much is required to keep your bond rating? Because I know we're cognizant that you'd have to have a cash reserve to keep your bond rating. What are you doing with the rest of the cash? What are these other encumbered projects that you have, and how necessary are them? All of that has a cost to it. There's a nice shiny building that they own, mm-hmm. That some like to call a Taj Mahal, that can also be sold off. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done.
Senator,
now, having said all that, my goal is to keep local control. So how do we bring this legislation back for a landing with a solution that includes reduction of tolls, that keeps local control, so we are able to pay for those projects that Doug is talking about and maintain those roads?
But I got to stop you there. Local control, you're saying let's dissolve the local board, which is filled by a majority of appointees from the county commission, and turn it over to the State Department of Transportation, right?
That's the current
that's
bill.
That's Tallahassee. That's
the current bill, but my bill is going to its first stop next week, and you know the amendatory process here. So what I'm saying is what my intent to do is to look for those solutions. So yeah, the current bill would do that, but that's not how we look to end up.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. This train is coming to an end. That much we do know. Doug Hanks, our partner with the Miami Herald, covering county government and transportation as well. Senator Manny Diaz, representing Hialeah, Republican in the State House with us, rather in the State Senate with us via FaceTime. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the South Florida Roundup, a guilty verdict against a Palm Beach Gardens police officer for shooting and killing a stranded motorist.
Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public media. A jury made a historic verdict Thursday in South Florida. Newman Raja became the first Florida police officer in 3 decades to be convicted of an on-duty shooting. Raja was found guilty of armed manslaughter and attempted first-degree murder in the shooting death of a stranded motorist, Corey Jones. Raja is 41 years old. He now faces a mandatory sentence of at least 25 years up to life in prison. A sentencing date is set for April 26th. Ben Crump is the attorney for the Jones family. He joins us on the South Florida Roundup now via FaceTime. Ben, welcome back to WLRN. The family's reaction to the guilty verdict this week, what was it?
They were very relieved. Obviously, it has been a very difficult emotional toll on this good family for the over 3 years now. And so when the jury came back with the guilty verdict on both counts, it made them believe in truth again, because they knew what the police officer said that night, even before the audio tape was discovered, was a lie. And so Mr. Jones, after the verdict was read and they had a celebratory moment, they all then went to the cemetery, to the grave site of Corey Jones, and he talked to his son, and they shared the moment that they will continue to use his legacy to try to make a difference in the world.
Ben, you sat through this case. The state was prosecuting this case against the officer, Newman Raja. What do you think made the difference for the jury? As you watch the jury reaction, as you listen to the prosecutors make the case and the defense try to make their case, what do you think, in your estimation, made the difference here so that former Officer Raja became the first Florida police officer in 30 years to be convicted of an on-duty shooting?
Yeah, I certainly think that the tape was the key factor, because you had an all-white jury, and the family, and as I were really concerned with nobody who came from Corey's community who didn't understand his life experiences or anything, what things would they believe that were made by the defense about Corey, even if it wasn't true, would they accept those things as the truth? And so that was a concern. That was the elephant in the room. But we are elated because this verdict gives hope for equal justice in America. When you think about that tape, and I'll say this, the tape was so crucial because he had killed Corey, lied about it, and had proclaimed stand your ground defense.
Yeah, so I want to ask you about a number of those things. The tape you refer to is an audio recording of a phone call that Corey Jones made to a towing company, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Absolutely. And can you imagine if they did not have, that tow truck company did not have the recording going, he would have got away with murder. And it really makes many of us in communities of color ponder how many black people have been killed by the police, and the police lied about it and got away with murder, Ben, but there was no recording.
Let me ask you, what you know, you mentioned the all-white jury in Palm Beach County. Mr. Jones was black. Did race play much of a role in your estimation in terms of what the jury listened to in the courtroom, the evidence that the jury had to weigh? Not everything that's been happening outside the courtroom, of course, in the media coverage, but as you know, when you get sworn into that jury box, you are confining your decision to what is being presented in that courtroom.
Exactly. And it is my sincere belief we will never know what goes through the minds of jurors. But my belief is that they're based this verdict on the evidence that they were focused in trying to do their job that the judge told them. You listen to the facts and you apply them to the law as I instruct you. And so I believe that the jury did exactly what we want jurors to do, and that is follow the evidence.
Mm-hmm. Ben Crump is along with us here on the South Florida Roundup. He represents the family of Corey Jones, the black stranded motorist who was shot and killed by a Palm Beach Gardens police officer, now former police officer, Newman Raja. Raja was convicted in Palm Beach County this week of armed manslaughter and attempted first-degree murder. Ben, you represented the families of Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown as well. How did this case, this Corey Jones case, compare? What were the differences and the similarities?
Well, I think, fortunately, you had objective evidence that we believe was clearly indisputable. And Corey Jones, even though we thought there was a plethora of evidence for the jury to convict the Neighborhood Watch volunteer for killing Trayvon Martin as he walked home minding his own business on the telephone with a bag of Skittles.
Yeah, George Zimmerman was not convicted in that case.
Was not convicted, and obviously this was devastating not only to Trayvon Martin's family, but to many families of color and many people who were moral and fair-minded in their approach, because we all believe that this could happen to our child, but had that been a white child, it wouldn't have happened that way. So we still try to speak truth to power. We have to live with this reality that every day our children go out, we are very concerned whether they will be killed by the very people who are supposed to be protecting and serving them. And it's abstract to many people, but minority parents, we all think about that every day of our lives.
Ben, yeah, the next court date for Newman Raja, the convicted killer, convicted of armed manslaughter in this case, is April 26th. That is the date he is due to be sentenced.
Yes.
What kind of preparations are you working on with the Jones family, and will there be a statement from the Jones family during that sentencing hearing?
There will. We're working on the victim impact statements.
Mm-hmm.
And so
can you tell us a little bit about what that may sound like?
Yes. I know from talking to his sister, Melissa, who is 9 months pregnant, now about to have her baby any day, a little boy. She is going to have a victim impact statement about what she would tell her son about his uncle that he's never going to see, as well as why the court should hold this murderer who took away light in their family to the full extent of the law, and why it should be just like if Corey had committed a crime, he would not get any benefit of consideration or doubt.
Ben,
so why should Newman do it?
We've got less than a minute left. Has the family heard from Newman Raja, the officer convicted of armed manslaughter?
Not at all. In fact, the police took a very cavalier position, still refusing to acknowledge anything about Corey's life, but only said that where has the world come to when a police can't defend himself? I mean, it's almost as if they refuse to accept these little stubborn realities that we call facts.
Ben Crump from Ben Crump Law with us, the attorney representing Corey Jones' family. Jones was shot and killed as a stranded motorist. The officer involved in that shooting, Newman Raja, this week convicted of armed manslaughter and attempted first-degree murder, becoming the first Florida police officer in 3 decades to be convicted of an on-duty shooting. Ben, thanks for joining us here on the South Florida Roundup. Appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you so very much for having me. Continue to pray for the family.
That'll do it for our program this week here on WLRN. The South Florida Roundup is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontado is our digital director. Our news director is Taryn Shepherd. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations here at WLRN is Peter J. Mertz. WLRN's director of radio programming and our technical supervisor this week is Jason Zabka, as he is every week. Thanks, Jason. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling. Thanks for texting. Thanks for listening. And above all, thank you for supporting public radio in South Florida.